Hey, so it's recording. All right. Well, really quick. This is just a casual phone call between me and one of my co-hosts. I don't have a friend come in for him this time around. And basically, I have
to go with Deep Throat if you want.
Wait, what?
We can go with Deep Throat if you want.
Oh, okay, yeah. Deep Throat then. Deep Throat it is. So, just before we get started, you know, find me on Twitter at Almighty Prophet. My website, Almighty Baller, which if you're listening to this podcast, you probably figured out. And my Facebook is Prophet Ball. And, you know, give me a 5-star review on iTunes and, I'll find you. And, I'll sexually gratify you. So, I guess, we just had this great conversation about Dennis Rodman that I ended with, crap, why didn't we record this thing? So, like, let's try to recreate this, because, like, I really want that for me. It started out with, I'm, like, literally cleaning my room as I have this conversation, so we're keeping it cash. It started out with the fact that on eBay, I found a Chicago Bulls Dennis Rodman jersey that, like, was signed, and it said three-peat, and the years that he three-peated, and it's cool as heck, and I, like, got it really cheap because the seller was not smart and sold it, like, had the auction end at, like, 4 a.m., yeah, I'm pretty excited to hang that up in my room.
So the thing about Rodman, what that kind of got me thinking about was something that I revisited the other day, which is the fact that Dennis Rodman's father is awesome because, first of all, he abandoned the family, 48 years before 2012. So somebody who has taken math in the last 4 years.
Whoa, probably. 48 years. I guess Dennis Rodman is older than I thought.
Yeah, so hella years ago. And Dennis Rodman did an exhibition game in the Philippines.
Such an exhibition is. Every day is an exhibition.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really have a lot of other options when you have a face like that. This was in 2012, and he kind of just decided to meet his father again for the first time in, you know, over four decades. And what was interesting is that Dennis Rodman's father, who's been living in the Philippines for that entire time.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah. He's weird. But he has had, let me get this, I want this figure to be absolutely right, 29 children by 16 different mothers.
Whoa. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
And his first name is, and I'm not making this up, you can Google this, Philander.
Holy crap.
His father's name is Philander, and he's had 16 different baby mamas. That's
wow.
Just, I know, it's almost too good. At the time, he was running a burger stand called Rodman's Rainbow Obama Burger, which I'm now looking at the website for that page, and I would like to inform everybody, in case they're in wherever in the Philippines this actually is, that it is now just Rodman's Rainbow Burgers and BBQ Platters.
He kicked out Obama.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it had probably something to do with the Trans-Pacific partnership. I think that was the last straw for Philander.
Yeah, it was like a copyright thing. So it was like a federal.
Yeah, at that point, you know, that in Free Gaza, he just was like, I can't even have this guy's name on my.
Maybe Kim Jong-un like threatened him.
Yeah, when you talk about Rodman, you talk geopolitical pressure. So that's really, you know, the two of them aren't despicable anymore. And so I'm looking at their menu right now, actually, and I really, your correspondent is elated to inform you that a picture of Dennis Rodman totally splayed out going after a loose ball is in the lower right-hand corner of every page. And there are pictures of Dennis Rodman all over everything. Oh, apparently they're called rainbow burgers because all of the food is dyed in festive, sort of non-salutary, not good to eat colors.
They're what are the things like colored Krabby Patties or something?
Yeah. I think
rainbow patties.
That's basically what he's doing with his life. And so he's trying to make a shade of money off of his son, but his name's Philander, and he's a philanderer, and that's just wonderful.
That's a connection right there.
I know, right? You know, I'm paying a lot of money to get this literature degree.
Education.
Yeah.
Okay, should I go, like, Navy Henley? With I'm making a grand romantic gesture tonight, I need to look my best for it. So,
well, I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go. I wouldn't have your top be darker than your pants. That's just amateur.
No, dude, that's untrue.
It is a riskier move. It is. It takes more panache to be able to pull that off.
Panache is my second middle name. My first being Philanderer. I was thinking about dyeing my hair for tonight. You know, as a gesture, like Dennis Rodman.
I would do a nice tartan pattern. If you could swing it. How much time do you have?
How much time do I have? I've got a while.
Yeah, okay. Well, then you could do a nice black watch, something like that.
I might go Slim Shady, too.
Yeah. Or, you could just dump peroxide all over your head and maybe just bleach. Like, they you know, that's what they mean when they say bleach blonde, you know, like Clorox. Like, just dunk your head in a bucket of Clorox for a while.
It's
got to be your whole head, though.
Did you happen to stumble upon the fact that the Magic are reportedly looking to trade Channing Frye, which is like a good move, I think.
Really? Channing Frye is always that player that when I'm talking about like basketball teams, I'm always like, they could use like a Channing Frye guy. Where's Channing Frye at? I think it's because he's sort of the er example of that, like, of that piece that like a lot of teams, you know, I mean, like as a sort of stretch four par excellence or whatever.
You're totally right, and I mean he's a really like quality player, but the thing is the backcourt. I don't know the power forward and center position is Vucevic, right? Eric Gordon, Tobias Harris, like these young, really good developing players. One of which just last year developed a really solid three-point jump shot, and this summer Aaron Gordon developed a really solid three-point jump shot. So like there's no room for a 30-year-old like sniper like Channing Frye. Like that's logic.
Yeah, sure. He's a bit of a redundancy.
And they need to develop these other guys. It's the same methodology as the Bucks dumping Zaza Pachulia.
Yeah, they've already got so many weird names that they just don't need anymore.
Is
Chris Villa still around? They need to go get him out of retirement.
Who?
Huh? I'm just talking about how Milwaukee needs more funny names on their team.
Greg Monroe's a little too average.
Greg Monroe sounds like an insurance salesman in Central Ohio.
I think that's his part-time job. I think that's why he moved to Milwaukee to be closer.
He seems like a guy. It seems like that seems like his temperament. That's what I got too.
Yeah, he chose to go to Milwaukee. Like he could have gone to other places, but like Milwaukee was his decision.
Yeah, but think about where he was coming from.
Detroit. But he could have gone somewhere. I think he went from like another. I hate to say crappy, but like. he went from Detroit, okay, to another, you know, mid Western or mid, you know, middle of the country, sort of just, you know, city, you know, and the
as the outpost of this outfit in that part of the country, Detroit's on the come up, and Milwaukee's pretty cool. I mean, they're not great, but they're pretty cool. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know the city nearly well enough. So if you're from Milwaukee, then, you know, I'd love for you to get in touch with me and tell me why I'm wrong, but you can't because you don't even know my name. So.
So I feel like it's worth mentioning that if I could visit one city in the country, it would be Detroit, right? And then conversely, I've never heard someone from Milwaukee have anything bad to say about Milwaukee. So I'm not saying that they're bad cities. They're great. I'm just saying that, like, I'm surprised.
They don't get a lot of – yeah, there's definitely – you have to take into account the attractiveness of the city itself, especially when you're talking about a league like the NBA. I mean, and places like Dallas feel that sting quite acutely because, you know, it's not, you know, it's Dallas. And so, you know, it doesn't exactly, people are not busting down the door, even if they want, even if the team is, even to be, go into a good situation there. So it's an uphill battle for places that aren't, you know, for non-coastal cities, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is getting a lot better with the CBA. But hey, this is what I was going to suggest. We're going to talk about two trades. Allegedly. Like, we'll see what happens.
Wild speculation and groundless paranoia.
No, I think that this is, like, so mutually beneficial that, like, it would be kind of silly to not work this out. Channing Frye for Gary Neal and Nene, and then you stretch Nene, which Orlando can, like, afford to do. Like, Orlando can, like, take on that deadweight contract and just wait.
That is a good idea. Wait, you're the cap wizard of the two of us, at least. Is there room for that?
Yes, the Magic can absolutely do that.
Well...
And
Washington looks a lot better that way, I think.
Okay, right. And I think honestly, if the Magic were to say no deal, which would be silly because Gary Neal is the 3-point sniper who would back up and sort of bolster the fact that Elfrid Payton is not a great shooter. Oladipo's getting a lot better, but he's not, you know, he's not yet as good as Gary Neal. Like, that's the perfect guy coming off the bench for that guard spot, Gary Neal, right? So if they weren't interested in doing that, hypothetically, I say, like, you know, it would still be in the Wizards' best interest, considering they're trying to win now, to take away Gary O'Neal from that trade and staple a first-round draft to it.
Yeah, that would be, I think that, like, I feel like that's almost, this, like, almost, especially in light of what we were talking about last or whatever about Washington, that, like,
One sec. This is an unedited conversation, but I edit and polish all of my podcasts, so I actually haven't published the Wizards conversation that I had after the Miami conversation, but that'll be coming soon. I'm just going to pop this one, you know, out and put it on. So, we had a Wizards conversation that has not yet come out, but you were saying, I hope I didn't interrupt your friend.
This is like a mixtape because the streets is hungry. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of agreeing with you in general, especially in light of the fact, in light of, you know, what we and what other people with eyes could tell about the Washington team is that they don't, is that the big situation gets really, really iffy there really quick, quite quickly, especially considering, you know, and so to have somebody who can actually get some daylight down there, especially like such a premium stretch forward. Like, I mean, he's old, but,
he's 30. He's 30. He's like in his prime.
He's 32. Like, that's a little, but still, I mean, you know, you want him as a mercenary to
Yeah, like the Wizards' defense the Wizards defense managed to be good despite having Nene, and like Channing Frye is a passable defender.
Yeah, all right. So I think that that trade, I think that the old that's a really perfect fit there.
Yes, mutually beneficial, right? It sort of, you know, gives the Magic the decision. Okay, are we going to go all in on rebuilding and get this first round draft pick, or are we going to like really actually make this team good right now? Which, you know, by all indications is what they're trying to do, and get Gary O'Neill, who would be the perfect backup, and like replace this guy who is not as good as other bigs, and also is older and like not developing. So it's like it's a great trade from both sides. I'd be remiss to not see it. Especially
the perfect team for that team that is trying to seriously build the team around Wall this year. Although it's like they'd have to start getting him out into the corner a little bit more. It looks like but I mean that's not that hard. I mean the guy can shoot threes. Just have him stand in the corner. They can keep him.
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about how we were talking about, you know, how Frye is a perfect example of the sort of piece that Washington needs in order to transition from a team that's built around to a team that's built really primarily and solely around Wall, as opposed to a team in which Wall is an important. You know what I mean? Is that this is the year that he gets the reins, and that Frye is precisely the sort of piece that they should be adding in order to make the team fit around him more, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we agree on that.
So I was not particularly high on the Wizards in the conversation we had. This would change things. I mean, the big problem is that, like, having Jared Dudley is really the only viable stretch coming off of his injury. Coming off like the fact that he's 6'7" and really his natural position is 3, I just like don't trust that, especially because one of the things we didn't talk about enough on the Wizards podcast is like Lux is like, hey, but like he defended fours. That's totally untrue. Ante Dekumbo played to the four on defense.
So wait, you said what wasn't true?
Jared Dudley played stretch four on defense. And he can do it on offense. That's not the worry. The worry that we talked about is whether he can do it defensively. And when he was on the block and had a good season as the stretch four, on defense, Ante Dekumbo played the four.
Yeah, that's, I think that's a valid point. I mean, Dudley is, you know, you don't want a 6'7", 225 guy playing, you know, lining up against opposing fours too much, you just don't want that.
Especially if there's no real option coming off the bench. Because, like, Chris Humphries has enough time to play at center, you know? And, I mean, he's going to have to really be high energy and really bang because he's, like, not a natural center. This would change everything and also really help the Magic. So, enough about that. I think we're in agreement, and I think that anyone listening to this podcast is smart enough to understand and agree, probably. If you don't,
it's a podcast. So.
Yeah, if you don't, just go to my website, find this podcast, leave me a comment, or if you love the trade. So the other trade we were going to talk about, right, and I just think that this is an interesting thought. I'm not sure if this is the right move. In fact, if I had to say one way or the other, it's probably not, especially given, player chemistry and stuff. Or personality chemistry and stuff. Eric Bledsoe, right? For Eric Bledsoe and Markieff Morris for Derek Favors. Now that money doesn't work out. That's the base idea. And then you'd have to sort of you know, retool it a little bit to make that work. What do you think?
The more and more I look into this jazz scene, the more and more interesting they are. I totally agree with you that it's kind of not a moot point, but very much an out there point, because I mean the team is very clearly high on favors, and they clearly seem committed, and that's sort of the weird way of putting it, but they want this team to, the identity of this team appears, they want it to be wrapped up in what they've got now, which is nice.
Yeah.
Is that favors is important to the team as they see it developing in the future. That being said,
yeah, I agree.
We talked about Burke, we talked about Burke over and over again as being really, really bad. And that the team, with the addition of you know, somebody like Blood, could really make up for Burke just is not a cerebral player, despite what people might say. You know?
No, no one likes to say that anymore.
Well, yeah, there was somebody who said it. Like, that was good. It was like on the NBA's official website that they have somebody who works for the NBA in kind of oblique way actually got published saying that Trey Burke is a savvy cerebral player. So that means, and Bledsoe, I think, would be, although Bledsoe himself, despite the fact that he's not Favors and the team wants Favors to be a key piece, Bledsoe's kind of got personality issues too, doesn't he?
No.
Well, wasn't there that whole debacle last off season when he would stop holding out and he seemed to be kind of, I mean, am I remembering that correctly?
Fun fact, Rich Paul, Tristan Thompson and LeBron's agent, is also Eric Bledsoe's agent.
I don't know. Is that guy good at being an agent?
People think he is because he's LeBron's agent. But, like, think about this for a minute. If I was LeBron's agent, I could get him a max contract.
Yeah, what the hell? Like, that's like being – that argument doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense. But it appears to me that he's not very good at this stuff. Because that whole thing was just a distraction that could not have been good for anyone involved.
Yeah, we'll see if we talk about Tristan Thompson terrible.
Well, I mean, LeBron just today, I think, or just recently, publicly said that it's becoming a distraction, and LeBron is one of those high friends in high places that he has. Sort of in his corner.
Now we need to talk about it because I disagree. Let's get back to the Derek Favors and Eric Bledsoe.
Okay.
Thing for now.
So all right. So you make your pitch again for what Bledsoe and Morris would do over Favors in that Utah team.
Okay. So Eric Bledsoe, great defender. Really good at getting to the basket, much improved jump shooter. I love Eric Bledsoe. Like, you agree with that? He's great.
Yeah, I like watching him play. He's a total bulldog out there.
Yeah, and I mean, like, bulldog. Like, that's, like, just like Utah Jazz. And as, you know, we're both aware, Dante Exum went down. So right now their point guard is Trey Burke, cerebral playmaker and just awful basketball player. I mean, now you plug in Eric Bledsoe, who can easily play 38 minutes a game, and you have, now you're probably, I mean, you're three, you know, you have, like, one of the best point guards in the league, certainly top 10, you have one of the top 10 centers in the league, and you have one of the top five small forwards in the league, and he's just a much better fit. And on top of that, Marquise Morris, you know, he's playing nice because he got a hefty fine. He got fined by the NBA for talking shit about the Suns. So, that's why he's playing nice now and not demanding a trade. There's hard feelings. I mean, there is. There's no way that there isn't. And getting him out of there is not a bad idea, especially if you're going to replace him with Flippin, Derek Favors. So Marquise Morris gets to go to a new place. And I saw an article recently that Utah Jazz was voted as the least hated team in the league. So, like, most liked. How would Marquise, not get along? He stretches the floor better than Derek Favors. He can shoot threes. He has gotten better every year. He's a developing player. He's fulfilled all of the things that Derek Favors is working on because they would work well right now. Derek Favors I like better, right? Personality and game. But Marquise Morris is a better fit. And considering that you're upgrading the point from Trey Burke to Eric Bledsoe, you can deal with Marquise Morris, right?
One little nitpick. Morris shoots the three better than Favors, but that's not – that's insofar as he shoots it at all. He shot three. He shoots it sometimes, but I think that the argument for him there is, you know, that it's stronger in other places than it is on that.
You should go to Marquise Morris's basketball reference page.
Yeah, that's what I'm at, where I'm at right now.
Okay, look at his upward trajectory. Look at how much he's improved. He's improved every year.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was talking to you sort of off the record about Morris, despite the fact I've always liked what I've seen out of him. I think that Favors is such a – I think that, like, if you divorce the sort of, like, understanding of the team identity and human – you know, the human part of all of this, and you think about it in a kind of a purely abstract way, then the trade, I think – the trade worked really well.
The fact that Utah loves Derek Favors, I'm not sure they would, like, Eric Bledsoe would be huge for them on defense, but I mean, they would get worse on defense. Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, clearly the best defensive power forward center combo in the league.
So they would trade, but they would trade a little bit of backcourt or front court rather defense for a premium perimeter defender in Bledsoe, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also offensive point guard in Bledsoe, and also.
Yeah. He's not just a defensive specialist, but I mean, I think that at least my understanding of his game has been centered on the fact that he's up there with like a couple of other point guards, maybe Conley and Beverly and stuff, for being sort of the S tier of defensive point guard.
He's A tier.
All right.
But you know, he's so athletic that he could really easily be S tier. And I mean, you know, I kind of regret saying no, he's A tier, because like that sort of implies that like, you know, that's like a practical distinction to make. Or like a meaningful one, is what I mean. But basically, on defense, they'd be sacrificing a little bit. They would also be taking Trey Burke away from being one of the defenders. But more importantly, they would give the Utah Jazz what they really need, a secondary ball handler in Eric Bledsoe, and a four who can stretch the floor. So Marquise Morris's mid-range jump shot right now is fantastic as it is, and I think he's going to improve insofar as the three. So, yeah, I think it's a good, trade machine trade. It's an interesting thought exercise. It probably wouldn't happen. I think we were going to talk about the Thunder, but I think perhaps what I'd rather talk about is the Tristan Thompson thing. It's more immediate.
All right.
No?
Yeah.
And also, I'm writing an article about the Thunder, so that's really what makes more sense. Do you want to like lay out the framework of what's happened? It seems like you have to know.
As far as what I understand it to be is that Thompson is, and you can cut or correct me, that Thompson has been holding out for a match, trying to leverage the fact that he has LeBron's agent and LeBron's sort of, LeBron is his friend and stuff, in order to try to get a max contract, and that it's becoming a bit of a sideshow because he's, as far as I know, has he shown up to camp yet? He's still holding out.
No.
Okay, yeah. All right, so.
There's additional stuff with that, too. If you go in the Cavaliers store and search Tristan Thompson, nothing will show up. If you went to the arena, all of the placards and flags are all down.
So I'm looking at what LeBron said about it yesterday. He said to reporters that it's kind of like, he said, quote, it's kind of like the elephant in the room all over for everybody. Hopefully some result can happen sooner than later. Obviously, that's what sort of to me is interesting about it is that if he's getting pressured publicly from LeBron, and whereas before, it's like, because I think that like if it weren't for their personal relationship, even if they had the same agent, if it weren't for their personal relationship, then like this wouldn't have been going on like this. Do you think that's true?
I'm not sure. Because I think LeBron, if LeBron, was like, look, what's the name of the owner of the Cavs? I can't believe I forgot.
Quimby or Gilbert.
So,
I don't know why I would call him Quimby for some reason.
If LeBron went into his office and was like, hey, I signed this one-year contract, and if you don't get my boy Tristan in here, I'm a bounce. And, like, Gilbert is really bent over a barrel in that regard. Like, he, signed Shumpert to a much larger deal than he should have, or should have if LeBron wasn't a factor. He's going way over the luxury tax, because if Dan Gilbert screws this up, then he will be forever reviled. You know what I'm saying? There's an understanding now that LeBron James, A, will leave. He'll do it. And B, the type of contract that he's signing is clearly indicating to everyone who's like a fan of the Cavaliers, everyone who lives in Cleveland, like, hey, Dan Gilbert, build me a championship team or I'm out.
He's putting them on a clock in a very public way. And so.
LeBron has not made that happen. And he also came out and said, I don't want to, like, talk about this. Like, I have no more input. LeBron is on the side of the Cavaliers. He is. LeBron, like, doesn't think that Tristan Thompson is a max player.
What it looked like to me as well. And I think that it's sort of an interesting change, because it's sort of interesting so far as Thompson has been – is that LeBron has kind of stuck his neck out to the guy a number of times in the past, hasn't he?
I mean, let's be frank here. Tristan Thompson is being a dick. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, I mean, he's yeah. As much as I'd like to see anybody, Dan Gilbert having to pay extra money is no skin off my back.
The thing is that. There's a hard cap, and they're going to have to re-sign Mozgov to a much larger contract next year. Tristan Thompson signing would maybe make that not a thing. Not signing his qualifying offer to go into free agency next year, And he threatened to do that and said, hey, if I sign a qualifying offer, like, I guarantee you that I will be leaving Cleveland. By not making good on that threat, because that expired on either the first or the third, I don't remember, he's put himself in a position now that either he will get a higher offer from the two teams that have space to sign him, like, just straight up right now, those teams being the 76ers, who have way too many players who are like Tristan Thompson, right? And the Trailblazers, who have way too many players like Tristan
Thompson. Yeah, he's going to have to be banished to one of those elephant boneyard teams like that. Those are the places where he would have gone rather. But, like, I don't. Yeah.
So he has a couple of options right now, okay? So he could continue to hold out, just screw up the team, piss LeBron off because it's going to hurt their record, piss everyone in his locker room off, and screw himself. He could either do that, right? Or he can go back to the negotiating table with Cleveland. Cleveland will explain his situation to them and just say, hey, like, you know, we'll still give you a bigger contract than you would otherwise get. You know, we're not, like, we'll still let you prove that you're a team that, like, players would want to pursue this season, because, hey, if Tristan Thompson holds out all year, no one is going to give him a max contract. Like, no one. It would be a horrible decision to do that. So they sit down with the Cavaliers, right? His terrible agent, is it Rich? Is that his name?
Rich Paul. Yeah, his name is which is like the best name ever, considering the line of work he's in. But
yeah. So he's just down across from Dan Gilbert and the general manager, who won manager of the year last year, and he's sitting next to Rich Paul. The Cavaliers explain the situation that he's in. He, like Harrison Barnes, immediately fires his agent. They say, hey, we had a 5-year, $70 million contract on the table. That's not there anymore. Because LeBron doesn't want you to be totally screwed over, but clearly just is starting to be like, oh, man, I recommended this guy for the job, and he's just being a dick. Like, I showed up and I was like, hey, man, like, this guy should be a Cavalier for the rest of his life. And he's being just a dick, like, really. So LeBron will let him go, especially because, like, you know who's the team first player? Anderson Varejão, who, like, you know, fills that role just marvelously, right? They really don't need Tristan Thompson. So, like, you know, the Cavaliers will either be, look, the same contract on the table. You know just as well as, like, we do that, like, you don't deserve this, but LeBron's going to, you know, we want to make LeBron happy. Like, we don't care about you, but we want to make LeBron happy, so we're going to give you a bigger contract than we need to. Or they could say, hey, look over at Milwaukee. You know who just got an extension? What's his name? John Henson. John Henson is the same as you, except a better shot blocker. The extension he got this offseason, 4 years, $40 million. And he's playing the same amount of minutes as you. He fulfills the same role, but he's a little bit better. So here's the offer we're making. 4 years, $40 million.
The thing about Varejão, though, Varejão's how old now? He's 30, probably 33, let's guess. Okay. And what he was out last year was an Achilles injury, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So do you think that's like the horse that Thompson's betting the farm on? Is that they don't want to take a risk on a 33-year-old coming off an Achilles injury?
No, I think that Tristan Thompson is getting really bad advice from his agent. He might be thinking that, but that's not the case. Anderson Barajal will have valuable minutes. He won't be as good, but he will be valuable.
I don't disagree with that, but what I'm saying is, I'm trying to get inside the psychology of this, I'm trying to get, think about what you could possibly say to yourself privately to sort of justify this line of thought, this line of action that he's taking. You know what I mean?
Well, here's what I think happened, right? And whether or not this was Rich Paul or Tristan Thompson's doing is they had a good amount of leverage, a very good amount of leverage, and he, because of that, got offered a much larger contract than he otherwise would have, because he said, we're going to sign the qualifying offer and be a unrestricted free agent next offseason, and I guarantee you that we will leave. That's quite the threat. Tristan Thompson let that deadline come and go. And now he's going to go into next season as a restricted free agent who will not get an offer that size. Someone will throw $9 million at him. Because if he doesn't sign a contract, you think the Cavaliers are going to play him at all? First of all, he could hold out, right? He could hold out all season. And not get paid this year, right? And then try to join a team for a max contract despite being very poisonous and not a stretch four who are the people getting paid right now. So he gave up this leverage, and I think that what happened is he got cold feet and wasn't willing to make a guarantee to the extent I'm leaving Cleveland. I think he was oh God, it's happening. They called my bluff, and it was a bluff.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me, too, is that he blinked first, and so now he's just sort of stuck in this, he's totally lost the high ground here. And he doesn't, I don't know nearly, I don't know enough about him as a person or whatever to make a judgment on him, but, he just is not... As a player, he was he was in the playoffs. He was really, really good. But I don't know. My kind of personal feelings about a player like that is really sort of frustrating and annoying. To see this happen and I don't know. He's really backed himself into a corner. I think I agree with you.
And sort of my parting comment on this, and then I at least have to go for a little bit to get my car out of the parking garage. We can maybe talk again after that, or maybe we'll just go. My parting comment on the Tristan Thompson thing is J.R. Smith was in a similar situation and opted not to sign the contract extension that Cleveland offered him. The free agent market came and went, and it became glaringly clear that no one was going to offer J.R. Smith more money than the Cavaliers were. In fact, he got all the way deep into free agency, and literally no one had that money to give to him. What ended up happening is he signed a contract for about half as much as he was initially offered. A lot of people I've heard and read say, there's no way that the Cavaliers would do this to Tristan Thompson. But the thing is, they would, especially now.
I think they would, especially since, you said, if it comes to a choice between, and it's weird because this is the opposite, this is sort of a swap polarity of normal. But now, if it ever comes down to LeBron versus Tristan Thompson, which LeBron, by these sorts of gestures that you're talking about, and putting them on the block, has kind of made it an implicit ultimatum in situations like this. But no, they're not going to. They're going to screw Tristan Thompson in a situation like that, because if it's between LeBron and Tristan Thompson, I'm sorry, but you missed out on that. You know what I mean?
I think that there's a chance that they, the two possibilities or that Cleveland is like, hey, LeBron wants us to do this, so here's a still pretty large contract. Take it, you idiot. But, like, I think it's more likely, especially with LeBron getting salty, that they're just going to be like, look, you know, $10 million a year, take it or leave it. Right?
Yeah.
So, anyways, this has been the first of its kind, just a casual conversation between me and this majestic creature. Deep Throat is what we decided.
Yeah,
Deep Throat, yeah. Again, I just want to put out there how valuable it is. And thanks, by the way. We're 16. We got 16 ratings and only 4 episodes, all of them 5 stars. So thanks again, everyone. Everyone who hasn't left a rating, we're an up-and-coming podcast. We've got 4 episodes, this being the 5th. Every little bit counts. So, and like I said, I'll find you and satisfy you. So find me on Facebook, Prof of Ball, and find me on Twitter, at Almighty Profit. Find me on the web at almightyballer.com. And find me on iTunes at Almighty Ballin', the Almighty Podcast. So, Spencer, you got any closing remarks?
Sebastian checked into rehab for alcoholism, so he left the team. So anybody who likes baseball, you can be satisfied that I'm also confused and scared and saddened and hurt and kind of like satisfied in a certain sense all at once by that.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, we are. But that's a different sport.
All right, everyone. I'm about to go give some Tiger Lilies and a hardcover bound book to a girl that I like, and I will catch all of you on the flip. Shout out to Flip Saunders, like that's awful.
Shout out to everybody named Flip. Can we get a shout out to everybody? Shout out to everybody who has one of those weird one syllable white guy names like Trip or Trig or Tag or Skip or Tad or Tug, you know, like any of those kinds of little names like that. Shout out to all of y'all. Y'all are killing it.
I would really like to end this on a positive note, but I don't think I want to make light out of terminal cancer. All my hopes are that he recovers. All right, so I'll talk to you. I'll talk to you later, Spencer. Thanks for coming on.
Yes.
And goodbye, everyone. See ya.